Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, September 4th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Sherry Ibarra in website copying scandal. It's unclear whether Washington Supreme Court will impose sanctions on legislature for failing to fully fund education. And Capone friends testify they suspected Capone of being behind the disappearance of his estranged wife, Rachel Anderson, in 2010. In the murder trial of Capone. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, this is the KRFP Evening Report. U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill today turned down a request by defendants in the lawsuit seeking to overturn Idaho's new ag-gag law on First Amendment grounds. The law says those who are caught filming, recording, or snapping pictures at an agricultural operation without permission can be jailed for up to a year and fined $5,000. That compares with Idaho's animal abuse law, which has the maximum jail sentence of 6 months for a first-time offender. Animal rights groups, civil rights groups, and media groups sued shortly after the law was signed. Judge Windmill dismissed Governor C.L. Butch Otter from the lawsuit today, saying he does not have enforcement authority under the ag-gag law. But he said the First Amendment claims brought by the coalition of plaintiffs are, quote, ripe for review. The plaintiff groups are the Animal Legal Defense Fund, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the American Civil Liberties Union of Idaho, the Center for Food Safety, Farm Sanctuary, Rivers Wish Animal Sanctuary, Western Watersheds Project, Sandpoint Vegetarians, Idaho Concerned Area Residents for the Environment, Idaho Hispanic Caucus Institute for Research and Education, Counterpunch, Farm Forward, and five individuals. The coalition filed the lawsuit March 17th, naming Otter and Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin as defendants. At the time, ACLU Idaho Executive Director Monica Hopkins said, "When the government tells us what we can observe and document, we lose not only our freedom of speech, but also our freedom of thought." Opponents of the ag-gag bill, which has its roots in American Legislative Exchange Council committees and has been passed in slightly different form in other states, say it also prevents documentation of violations of worker rights and practices that would put the food supply at risk. The coalition wrote in the lawsuit, "The law makes it criminal to document animal welfare, worker safety, and food safety violations at an agricultural production facility, thus gagging speech that is critical of industrial agriculture, including speech that advances significant public interests in protecting Idahoans' safety." Republican candidate for Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction Sherry Ibarra has removed position points from her website, which were duplicated word for word from Democratic opponent Jana Jones' website. The Idaho Education News first reported on the duplication of a 46-word paragraph under the banners called Join Team Jana and Join Team Ibarra on each respective website. According to the Spokesman Review website, Jones issued a statement saying, "I appreciate my opponent taking responsibility for plagiarizing content from my website, but the fact that it happened at all is troubling. Integrity matters in this office, and so does attention to detail. Idahoans have had enough of a superintendent who is not open, transparent, and accountable, and my opponent seems to be cut from the same cloth. I will be a superintendent who will provide leadership Idahoans can trust." Ibarra issued a statement saying she was surprised by the duplicate wording. Her statement said, "I sent my web manager's copy regarding issues and positioning statements. They wrote other copy points on the contact page. However, I take responsibility for final copy content. My focus is and will continue to be how we best provide a strong future for Idaho's children. That future begins with the very best education and preparation we can offer them." A solicitation on both websites also has sentences with only one word changed. Jones's website said, use the optional message box to share your thoughts and ideas with her regarding education in Idaho, while the Ibera website says, use the optional message box to share your thoughts and ideas with us regarding education in Idaho. Jones told the Idaho Education News she wrote the verbiage with her campaign spokesperson, Robert Allen, before the website went live January 6th. This is the second time Ibarra has run into problems with her campaign website. Earlier this summer, she placed the name of one of three Republican primary opponents on a list of members of her campaign team. That candidate, Randy Jensen, said he did not sign up as a member of the Ibarra campaign team and does not endorse her candidacy. Ibarra subsequently removed Jensen's name from the list. During a Washington Supreme Court hearing on the McCleary case yesterday, Deputy Solicitor General Alan D. Copsey sought to reassure the justices the legislature is paying full attention to the court. Copsey said sanctions or a contempt finding by the court were not needed for lawmakers to finish funding K-12 education. The 2012 McCleary decision says the legislature has violated the state constitution's provision regarding education being fully funded. During the hearing, justices asked Copsey several times why they should trust the legislature to finish funding education when they ignored previous orders from them in the past. Copsey replied that the passage of time matters in this case. A coalition of parents, students, teachers and community groups want the Supreme Court to hold the legislature in contempt. An attorney representing the coalition, Thomas Ahern, said kicking the can down the road is just one more delay. Previously, the Supreme Court set a deadline of the beginning of the 2017 to 2018 school year to fix various funding issues, including providing more instructional hours to high school students, fully funding public transportation to schools, increasing staffing levels, increasing school equipment and supplies funding, and smaller class sizes in some grade levels. In general, the state education system must not depend so much on local levies to fund education. At yesterday's hearing, justices noted the legislature has made some reforms since their 2012 ruling and has begun to pay for them. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Moscow School Superintendent Greg Bailey says there are no plans for further delays in the start of school in the Moscow School District. Bailey told the Daily News the district is still planning to start school next Monday. The school board pushed back the first day of school from the original start date of August 26th after delays in the numerous construction projects in the district were found. Bailey said the main goal was to have sufficient functional bathrooms when classes begin, and he says all bathroom remodeling projects will be complete by Monday, with the possible exception of those in the high school. The district has ordered portable bathrooms just in case, which will be returned unused if they are not needed when classes begin. Construction on some of the behind-schedule projects will continue after school begins, but workers will be required to work after school hours or on weekends. The U.S. Small Business Administration announced yesterday they will make low-interest loans available to homeowners, renters, and business owners who have destroyed or damaged property due to the windstorm that hit eastern Washington and northern Idaho July 23rd. Washington Governor Jay Inslee said the storm destroyed 53 homes in the state. The loans will have interest rates as low as 2.2%, payable over 30 years. Business owners are eligible for up to $2 million in loans, and homeowners are eligible for up to $200,000 in loans for replacing or repairing real estate. Renters and homeowners are eligible for up to $40,000 loans to replace personal property. The loan application webpage is disasterloan.sba.gov/ELA. That webpage again, disasterloan.sba.gov/ELA. That's part of the Small Business Administration website. A friend of Charles A. Capone testified yesterday that Capone did not answer a question from him whether he had anything to do with his wife's disappearance. Capone is on trial in Moscow for the murder of his estranged wife, Rachel Anderson. Anderson disappeared in April 2010, and no body has been found. Friend Robert Bogdan testified in Second District Court, quote, "He wouldn't look at me, his head was down, and he never answered the question directly." According to a report on the trial in the Lewiston Tribune, Jennifer Norberg, who described Anderson as her best friend, testified Capone and Anderson broke up after a physical altercation which left dark red marks on Anderson's neck. Norberg said Capone told her the marks were due to an accident, but she didn't believe him. She said she suspected Capone was behind Anderson's disappearance as soon as she heard about it. Norberg said Anderson was frightened and sleep-deprived at the time of her disappearance because she had been stalked and harassed on the phone for several months. The Institute for Women's Policy Research says Idaho is 45th among the 50 states and District of Columbia in women's workplace fairness. A report by the Institute factored in median annual earnings, earning ratios between men and women, percentage of the workforce occupied by women, and percentage of managerial or professional jobs held by women. Idaho's workforce is 58.2% female, but 37% of women's jobs in the state are managerial or professional. The median annual salary for women in Idaho is $30,500, and women in Idaho earn 73.5% of what men earn. A judge in Twin Falls yesterday sentenced the grandson of the Idaho Department of Correction chief to life in prison for second-degree murder. District Judge Randy Stoker sentenced 23-year-old Bradley Frank James, who is the grandson of Correction Department head Brent Renke, to life for killing 58-year-old Larry Miller of Filer December 12th. According to an account in the Twin Falls Times-News, prosecutors said James shot Miller in the face and stabbed him 25 times in Filer. Judge Stoker said James will be eligible for parole in 15 years. Special Prosecutor Mark Heidemann argued for a long sentence and rejected the argument that post-traumatic stress disorder from military service contributed to James's likelihood to kill. Heidemann told the court James had built a potato gun when he was 18 years old and threatened to use it to kill people. He said, "It's obvious he had issues. I don't know if he's a psychotic killer or an alcohol-abusing drug user." The Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest has extended the deadline for first-round comments on the forest plan, which forest officials hope to enact by 2016. The new deadline is November 14th, giving those wishing to comment two more months. Forest Supervisor Rick Brazell wrote in a press release, "We've received requests for an extension from a number of people, and we want to make sure the public has ample time to understand the proposed action and share comments with us. As drafted, the plan recommends between 236,000 and 333,000 acres of new wilderness, adding to the 1.1 million acres on the forest currently protected. The plan would allow logging on 726,000 acres of the 4 million acre forest. Under the plan, up to 150 million board feet of timber could be harvested per year." Friends of the Clearwater Ecosystem Defense Director Gary McFarland said he was glad the Forest Service granted an extension because more people and groups will be able to provide written comments. McFarland told the Daily News his group believes two separate collaboratives working on plans for the forest circumvent the National Environmental Policy Act. The Nez Perce Clearwater Management Plan Collaborative is an open group including sporting, government, timber, and environmental groups. And the separate Clearwater Basin Collaborative is working with groups invited by Republican U.S. Senator Michael Crapo of Idaho. McFarland said he is particularly concerned with the Clearwater Basin Collaborative's recommendation that only 20% of the forest's land that qualifies for wilderness should actually be designated. He said the collaborative is recommending what could be special rights for outfitters that could, quote, negatively affect the ability of agencies to administer wilderness and protect it in perpetuity. Friends of the Clearwater has published an alternative plan for the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest, which recommends more wilderness protection and Wild and Scenic Rivers Act protection for 9 river segments within the forest. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, we're expecting fair skies in the Moscow-Pullman area all the way through Monday with a low of 42 tonight, tomorrow's high 78, highs of 84 degrees Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with lows around 50 degrees. Currently, fair skies 71 degrees. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at about 6:30. At 7:30, Alan Solon's in to play jazz for you. And if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to buy raffle tickets for the Citizen 2 Jamais bike that we're giving away. And a raffle. Raffle tickets are $5 each, $5 for $20. You can purchase them at Moscow Farmers Market, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Friendship Square, or at the KRFP Studios at 114 East 3rd Street, downtown Moscow, or from KRFP DJs. I'm Lee Robertus. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 FM.